Egyptian Streets podcast, Kahirot edition. Kahirot are overpowering, victorious. They are Egyptian women. I'm Noran Morsi, your storyteller for this season. The Egyptian woman is multifaceted, creative, and absolutely powerful. She comes in all fields, worlds, and roles. This summer, Egyptian Streets brings you stories of 10 Egyptian women from Al-Kahira and the world. 10 women, 10 stories, endless power. Today's guest is
Hiba Shambo, and I am, I wear so many hats. So I'm a mother, first and foremost, to my 3.5-year-old toddler twins. I don't think they're toddlers now. I guess they're 3.5. I also own a bakery called the Four Fat Ladies, which I run on a daily basis. I'm a freelance interior designer, and now I have a podcast. I wrote a book. So yes, I have got so many things I'm juggling. So it's really tough. And I'm a wife. So that's also a lot of work.
Where were you born, and what do you remember about those first few years?
Well, I was born in the US, but we didn't stay there for very long. We were mainly in the Middle East. So we were in Kuwait for a few years, and then we came back to Egypt in around 87. Those years, I remember being like an aqua baby. I was always in the pool. Those days, I remember being a lot of fun. We used to be at the pool all the time because the life there in Kuwait, I think, was mainly revolving around compounds. So we were, and we're three sisters. So we were always together. Me and my younger sister are very close in age, a year and a half apart. And my older sister and I the gap is a little bit bigger, 3.5. So at that time, I think I was closer to my younger sister. My older sister was like 3.5 years older, is like, you know, like, a different generation. So, but yeah, it was fun, carefree, easygoing. And in the 80s, life was pretty quiet. Not like now. We didn't have iPads. We didn't have any of that stuff. We didn't have TV, Netflix, TV on demand. We watched whatever was on TV. I remember watching, and I think of that with nostalgia until now, with my grandparents. Akhtarna Lek, I don't know, you probably are really not aware of that. It used to come on every Wednesdays. There was Akhtarna Lek and Adam Yughani. So it was really just so, they would have video clips of people singing. So it was like things like John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. And episode series were like MacGyver and these kind of things. So it was a fun time. You just waited impatiently for that week to come to watch the thing. So I liked that. In that sense, it was more simple. There's that anticipation for something fun, something to look forward to.
I love that. So I want to talk about the Four Fat Ladies. For those who don't know, the Four Fat Ladies is a bakery here in Cairo that's expanded quite a bit. How did the Four Fat Ladies come about?
We all three of us love to bake, and we absolutely love American desserts. So we love the brownies, the cakes, the frosting, the bigger the better, obviously. So we felt that there was kind of a gap in the market when we started in 2012. Everything was more centered around eclairs and, you know, millefeuille, the more French pastry, that feel in Egypt, that was always here. And people are pretty good at it here. So we said, well, let's do something a little bit different, like, you know, chocolate chip cookies, brownies, frosted cakes, carrot cake, cheesecake. And it was something we kind of, all three of us did together as sisters and with our mother, because she taught us how to bake, and she's a very good cook and she bakes really well. And so that was kind of a unifying point for us, the three of us as sisters. My sister, younger sister, always wanted to do it. So to encourage her, I kind of nudged her a bit, and we set up this company together, and yeah. And so we did it in 2012. And since then, it's evolved quite a bit. It's challenging. The food and beverage business is pretty tough, I think. Everywhere in the world is pretty tough, in Egypt as well. And there's so many things, so many elements that are related to it. So it's not only looking at the products and, you know, how they taste and all of that. It's also, you have to think of the consumer, what they like, what they don't like. There's the price sensitivity of consumers in Egypt. There is the availability of raw materials, of good quality raw materials, trying to make it costs, you know, being more profitable, cost management. Then you have on the back end, you have the, you try to do the marketing and sourcing new shops and new opportunities. And then you have on the other end, you have the production managed by my sister, basically, because she's the chef and she decides on the products. But also you have the production of the products. And when you scale out, of course, it's completely different than when you bake it from home, obviously, as you know. So yeah, there's a lot of things that funnel through the whole brand, the business. So it's nice. I like it. Challenging, but tough.
What was the biggest obstacle in developing and growing the business?
I'll tell you, it was mainly basically the back end. We knew what we wanted as a brand. We knew what products we wanted. It's the back end of producing, supply chain, delivering to stores. Because initially what we had wanted was we wanted in each store to have production facility in the store so it's freshly baked. But for our product, it wasn't very easy to do that. And in terms of spaces here are expensive, so we didn't really, we couldn't really go that route. So for us, was trying to find a way to do the back end, the production and delivering to the stores, which we did when we partnered up with TBS. So we've been partners with them since 2015, and they've, you know, they've helped us out a lot in that sense, in the back end. It's difficult in Egypt. You have a vision and you have like a dream that you want to do. It's not easy necessarily to implement it. It's not as straightforward. Some people are very good at figuring this out. It's a little bit, in Egypt, I find it's a little bit of a hustle to get, to do your own business and get it going. Especially this kind of business that entails a lot of different things. Because as an interior designer, do I freelance interior design? So I don't have, it's easy. It depends on me and my time. So I can manage my time well. I'm not depending on anybody else really. So it's easier to manage.
What was the moment where you felt like you've kind of made it? What was your success moment with the business?
I guess when everybody started imitating our salted caramel brownies, and everybody after that launched salted caramel on everything. At the beginning, we had it, which was really funny. I always tell this story. At the beginning, people were looking at us like, why are you putting salt on caramel? That doesn't make sense. You know, and I was like, when clients would tell me that, I was like, by the way, we didn't invent that. It's been around for a while, salted caramel. And then we went from people having an aversion to it and criticizing it to people saying, oh, by the way, there isn't enough salt in the salted caramel. So I was like, I realized that we were onto something at that point. And then after everybody else had done salted caramel and, you know, everybody imitated. I find till now a lot of people imitate some of our things. But yeah, no, it's flattering. I think the salted caramel is what put us on the map.
And now pivoting to Mommy's Happy Hour, you published a book. How did that come about?
The thing was, I decided to write a book because I had been struggling to get pregnant for a very long time. From the age of 27, actually. And so I just wasn't getting pregnant. And my whole goal was to get pregnant and have kids. At the time, I wasn't really keen on being a working woman, to be very honest. For me, the working was in between the getting pregnant. It was a filler, basically. I was like, I'm going to get married and I'll work. And so I'm a little bit independent, but just until I have kids, it's temporary. Just didn't happen. So I was like, what the fuck? Am I supposed to be now working? And so I found myself, all I was focused on trying to get pregnant. So I did all sorts of things to try to get pregnant. So by the time I got pregnant, I was 41. I was older. At 40, I was like, you know what? This is just ridiculous. It's obviously not my calling. Maybe something else is my calling. So screw it. I'm not going to get pregnant. And then my doctor convinced me to go for one last round of IVF. And anyways, I guess when you give up, that's when it happens. So I got pregnant at 41. I had twins. And when I got them, I guess I was a little disappointed because I knew twins would be a struggle. And that was my worry with doing IVF and, you know, assisted reproduction. But so I guess basically I was disappointed in the sense that I thought that there would be this immediate love connection and this like bond, and I thought I would be amazing at being a mother because that was all I wanted to do, right? I had such a hard time breastfeeding. It was like almost impossible for me. I was so frazzled that I was like, I didn't have a connection with either one really. I didn't have a bond with them. Also, maybe having two at the same time was very difficult. I couldn't connect with one or the other. I had to give each one a certain amount of attention. So it felt like it was more like trying to manage my time between the two, which felt very, a little bit unnatural in terms of a mother. It wasn't what I expected it. So I had depression and I was really, you know, I wasn't in my best shape. For sure. So I decided to write a book because for me, I felt that humor kind of, for me, humor is like the solution to everything. You know, if I'm depressed or if I'm like upset about something, for me to communicate, I communicate it with humor just to kind of alleviate for me in my mind, to make it less of a, you know, a deep or heavy conversation. So what I did was I started writing notes about the whole thing because every time, and you know how Egypt is. Everybody's in your business. And it's like, can you guys give me a fucking break and try to let me do this on my own? La, la, la. You have to do it like this. And everybody's opinion is the best opinion. You know? Somebody will come and tell you, do it this way. And then somebody else will tell me, why are you doing it that way? No, you have to do it this way. No, but so-and-so said this. La, la, la. You know? It's like I was going between both and I was between everybody. It was a rough time for me. So I decided to write a book and look at these things in a funny way. It's a humorous book and it was my way of getting through that whole postpartum depression. You know, the fact that in the morning I had to wake up and my husband's snoring in bed and I'm like, get up and help me because I needed physical help because I was alone. Also, you know, nannies, everybody says, you know, in Egypt, it's really easy because you have nannies. It's not easier if you have nannies. First of all, I didn't have full-time nanny until my kids were a year and a half. So I was doing it mainly on my own. I couldn't, and people expected me to work. I think the expectations are really high here, even though people say it's much easier here. So I had to work and at the same time take care of them full-time and at the same time socialize and at the same time have uzumas and at the same time look good. And at the same time, people would be like, Ida, and you haven't lost the weight yet? It's like, are you guys kidding me? So juggling all of these duties was super difficult. And so I wrote a book about it. And it was, and I think it's a pretty funny book. So yeah, I have a lot of material from my podcast now, which I love. I get like a lot of fun people on and a lot of interesting topics. Season 2, I think, is going to be a lot about sex, which seems to be a fun topic everybody likes to talk about. So yeah, so I think it's, and I'm actually, my husband's going to be co-hosting with me one every four episodes because people seem to be receptive to him and they like him. I've gotten some good positive feedback about him being on the show. So he's going to be my co-host every few shows. So it's fun.
That's a great segue to the podcast. So I'm guessing the book came before the podcast.
Yeah, the book came before the podcast. I think I decided to do the podcast. A friend of mine who lives in the Cayman Islands, she suggested to me, she's like, your book is great, but why don't you continue it and do a podcast? I'd never thought about it. It was in 2019. And then when I thought about it, I thought, it's a great continuation because the book is about my first year of motherhood. But my experiences didn't stop there, obviously. After the first year, there's still much more going on. It's different and it takes different shapes and takes different, like it's just a whole new thing. So I said it'd be great to connect with other women. Also, the thing is, I felt very lonely because I didn't have very many friends. My friends had kids younger, and then I had kids older. But I didn't have anybody close to me who was having kids. So I felt like a bit of a gap or a void in my life. So I said it would be great to have some to be. The nice thing about this podcast would be to connect with other women who are going through the same thing as me and who are more honest about motherhood because everybody before I had kids painted a rosy picture. Nobody says the real, nobody gives you the real truth about it. So I thought it'd be nice to just have like a fresh, like honest, you know, chat with other women about motherhood.
Not to make you choose, but what's your favorite episode of the podcast? If one of the listeners of this podcast wants to listen to their first episode of your podcast.
I love the episode with my husband. We did one episode when we were, it's really funny, but we kind of compared ourselves to Harry and Meghan Markle, Harry, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, because they had a podcast coming out. I was like, oh my God, how do they have a podcast? And they were talking about their interactions really cute. And I was like, our interactions cuter than theirs. And we speak about like personal things, like how at the beginning, when we first started dating, how long it took me to use the bathroom when he's not in the house, and like how it, like things like that. And we were just wondering what it was like with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Do they, you know, are they comfortable using the bathroom when the other person's around the corner, or are they just normal like us? And of course, my husband had a crush on her from the days of Suits. He used to watch, he loves that show, actually. I never really watched it, but he used to watch it. He loves her, and he has a man crush on, I don't know, one of the guys that's always well-dressed. So we spoke about that. So it's funny. It's a fun show. It's a light show. I like that one.
Yeah, and I like how candid you are. In Egypt, everything is taboo, and I think it helps start the conversation.
Yeah, I'm hoping to, because I feel like even though I'm open-minded growing up in Egypt, I know the taboos that are put upon women. And I think people assume just because I'm open-minded and not veiled, maybe, or I'm not like the typical, that I'm not subjected to it. But I'm just as subjected to it as other women. I mean, all women, I think, in Egypt, we're all subjected, and we're all trying to, you know, tread this fine line between what is right and what is expected and what we want as human beings. So it's difficult. And I come maybe from a different generation than yours. You guys are lucky. You guys are more open about these things. I remember in my 20s, like, I never spoke about these things, and I would be really worried if I did. You know what I mean? Like, if I say something, it's like, oh God, what did I say last night? Did I say something I shouldn't have said? There's that a lot of pressure here to fit this mold. And so I really wanted to break that barrier and be able to have an honest conversation with women. And like you said, people don't have it enough, and women in our 40s, we still don't have it enough. So yeah, I'm happy that people are receptive to it.
I feel like for young women, it feels like the choice is work or motherhood, or doing both at once and having zero time for yourself. And there's really this perfectionist mindset. But I feel like you did both without really intending to at separate times. Like, you did the working without kids thing, and then you had kids and you're still working. So I was wondering if you had any advice for young women who are having to deal with that choice. And we're growing up in this more feminist age, maybe, where you're told you can do everything, but maybe you don't want to do everything, or maybe you just want to do one thing. I know that's a very broad question.
But I'll tell you, because it is an important one. I think as women, I find that we're becoming much more powerful. And I feel like we can do so much. There's so many women doing even like littlest things from home and things like that, and they have a huge impact. Personally, my advice to all women, I'm lucky now, looking back, I'm lucky that I was not given the opportunity to have kids earlier, because it made me work. I find way too many women financially dependent on somebody else, let's say if they get married or their families, which I think is detrimental. It is very detrimental to women, because it doesn't give you that voice or that strength. If you are, even if you're not making a lot of money, even if you're just, you know, you're just financially independent and you're going that route, it's very important, because it allows you that freedom to do whatever you want. Also, it allows you for the freedom not to take bullshit from your husband or your boyfriend. It's not the only reason. I mean, there are some women that are financially independent that still take crap. But what I'm saying is that at least it doesn't, that's not your, you won't be submissive because of that. And it's very important, because it also gives you a sense of identity. And I think it's very important. I think any woman needs to do something that she likes so that she can be at least occupy herself. So even maybe now you don't make money from it and you have kids, that at some point you can get back into it. The other thing is I also feel that people should have kids a little bit older, maybe in their 30s. I would not recommend 40s, to be honest. But I think in the 30s, like mid-30s, I think it's great because it gives you that opportunity to grow and mature a little bit before you have to take on that responsibility. And the fact that people, although I have to say, nowadays with social media and everything, people act like you can have it all. You can, but it's really tough to keep all of that. You know, you have to make choices sometimes. You know, if you just, let's say you want to take care of yourself, but you just don't have time to work out, there's nothing wrong with taking a break from it. Or if you just can't work for a while and you need a break, take a break from it. It's just too much pressure now to have to do everything. So I think everybody needs to pick and choose what it is that they want to do and not feel guilty about not having to do everything. So that's my advice.
Thank you so much, Hiba, for your insight today. If you're interested in listening to Hiba's podcast, it's called Mommy's Happy Hour, and it's on all podcast platforms. And you can also read her book, Mommy's Happy Hour, which is available at DWEN. The Egyptian Streets podcast is edited and produced by your host, yours truly, Noron Morsi. Our theme music is The Zeppelin by Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much to the Egyptian Streets team for supporting the work we do constantly. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can check out our past season on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We've interviewed people like Bessem Youssef, Rosaline Elbey, Noor Imam, and many more people. Check out the current season focused on Egyptian women. My last episode was with Pinky Slim, folklore dancer. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts to help us reach even more listeners. Thanks for listening. I'm Noran Morsi.